and wait for the music.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine Podcast, episode 93. We're getting very close to 100. Welcome to the live stream with Permaculture Canada, and special guest tonight is Travis Olson. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Joining the gang again.
So, I'm Cormac Harkin, your host, founder of Vine Permaculture. Lindsay and Graham, you want to introduce yourselves there?
Yeah, I'm Lindsay, CEO of Permaculture Canada and Armagarden from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Graham Towerton, Chief Operations Officer, Permaculture Canada, owner of Permaculture Adventures of Michigan, and I'm in Michigan, Adrian, Michigan.
I always forget to say where I'm in Northern Ireland. So guys, a lot happening this month. I suppose we should start with Regen World. I was very jealous of all the pictures of all you guys together. Seemed like a good crack.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to meet some of the designers that we worked with previously. We met with Alex and Chanel was there as well. We met Niall from Thriving Roots was there. Who else did we meet? But Julia was there. I got to meet Graham's farmhand. So that was really cool. We were bunked up in a hotel and that was lots of fun. I haven't done that for a while, but it was a great time. And we had a booth set up there for the 5 days that I was able to attend. We met a ton of really interesting people, interesting projects. It was really unlike other events that I have been throughout the year. I felt like there was a completely different take on the regenerative fields and the angle that they were coming at. So it's more about circular economies, business model styles, the use of AI and that sort of intelligence, creating tools. And we can get deeper into that. But just as a general synopsis, fantastic event. It was great to be in Austin alongside South by Southwest. We were able to visit with one of our previous clients, Rebecca Birdwell, and catch up with her and her husband. So that was great. We had designed a property for her in the past. And yeah, it's just so awesome. Maybe Graham can add to it.
Yeah, so adding to it, Matt Powers was another person that was good to see him again after seeing him the first time out in Acres USA in Wisconsin. And I actually had the privilege of Julia and myself going out to Rebecca and David's place. We spent probably 4 or 5 hours touring around their place, which was really good to see their implementation of the design that Lindsay worked on. So very enjoyable time. Got to swim in a creek in the Austin area, which was fun as well. The first day that we got there, the weather was wonderful. And yes, I've added to my tan collection as well.
Travis, what have you been up to anything interesting?
Yeah, I've been busy, hard at work, developing a new, it's a CRM management system for, it's for food forest designers and installers, but it can be used for any business basically. But I'm focused on growing as many designers and installers as possible. So, you know, and trying to get people to come over and start a design and install business from wherever, you know, and provide them the education and the tools to do it, and then help them make money by being a lead generation and sales tool for them, you know. And so I've been developing this whole system. And then also a new website for all the members. It's called Food Forest Design Network. And I have a replicated website for all the members who don't have their own website. So
that's class. Yeah. At the very end, you can go into detail on that. If that's right, you can tell us all about it.
I don't want to get too into it too much because there's like Lindsay, man, you get into that AI stuff, man, you can go deep. And get just make it a little more difficult. But so I've been doing that all winter and getting to the point right now where I'm starting to let people in to see it, because there's actually something you can look at now and you can use, and starting to test things. So it's getting exciting, getting real close. And I think it's going to be pretty something pretty cool.
Class. Is that the website I registered on?
Yeah. That's the directory part. That's the nationwide business directory. But there's a whole back end system, portal, whatever you want to call it. But it's where there's a lot of tools, training, collaboration stuff, permaculture library, a lot of AI tools, a lot of stuff.
Class. Well, I had a very interesting month. I lost my first client.
The one you were working on, you lost that one?
Yeah, I think it was my own fault. I have to take responsibility for it. I wasn't prepared going in with prices, basically. So, and it was taking me a long time then to go to suppliers and find out what the prices were. And then the client wanted a mature food forest. So instead of 2-year bare root, wanted 5-year stuff. So obviously then when the expense crept up, they were quite shocked at the price. So then when me and the landscaper delivered the price, then it was well over what was expected. So that was my fault because I didn't know the prices going on. But now I know that a shed costs $2,000, a greenhouse costs $2,000. Yeah. I know their price per hedging, per meter. So that when I'm talking to the client now, I can say, no, if you get a 2-year bare root, it's £20. If you get a 5-year, it's £100, or whatever it is. So now I know at least they say that. So my fault, I wasn't prepared, but at least now I've gone away and got them prices and for the next client that I actually know. So going to focus again on getting some sales. So I have a week now to spend getting my garden up to scratch so I can use it as a demonstration property. It's a bit of a mess. I got 2 new wee puppies, which is throwing a right spanner in the works. And as the podcast goes, we had Alex Pop on, which is great, Permaculture Party. I think he's met him down in Regen World. Prima Walker on. She's in California. That was really interesting. I love talking about composting. She's started a composting business there, which is really cool. Definitely recommend that episode if you're in the composting. And then Rob Avis was on then a couple of days. What a gentleman. He was excellent. It was really nice to meet him. So that's been my whistle stop tour of what I've been up to. The client one was very interesting. I think it was just a lesson in the end. I have experienced this before with when you're putting a design to clients and you know, like, for example, they wanted the location of things. I was saying, well, there's most sun here, but they had a preconceived thing of, no, we didn't want, I don't want to locate my shed there. I want to locate it here. And I think Graham, I chatted to you before about this, about how do you balance the best design with a client? And then when the client wants a particular thing, it's not really your design anymore.
Yeah, it can be challenging for sure. Yeah. And, you know, it can be complicated, you know, sometimes if you're the installer and not the designer as well. You want to try to maintain as much integrity to the design as possible, because obviously there's a lot of good reasons why designers have chosen to place things in certain locations and make selections of different trees. You know, so you want to maintain that integrity of the design as much as possible, but then also be flexible to meet changing needs from customers. And so sometimes it is hard to balance all that. And then sometimes too, when the design gets done, you know, if customers don't have a really, really good understanding of the logic that goes into the design, then perhaps they feel like it's really easy for them to just change things here, there, and everywhere. And that then creates a lot of conflict, you know, especially as the installer, you know. So, you know, working with Lindsay as an example, she's now changed the design process for how Permaculture Canada is doing things in terms of guild design, which then gives me a lot of flexibility for how I choose the plants that go within the guild. As long as there's a certain number and a certain type that are present, then, you know, it gives me a lot more flexibility to work with the customer on plant selection. So that helps a lot.
Well, interesting. All right, I find this challenging because they give me a list of 150 plants. And it was completely backward. And then so I'm starting for the plants, trying to fit in function and form rather than starting with the form and function and then selecting a plant for that particular area.
Yep.
So that was very, very challenging. But at least now I have a list of 150 sort of local plants that do okay. So it was been interesting, but it's been a big lesson to, for me. So I was quite positive about it. Right, just want to go back to Regen Wordlands. You were saying it was a very interesting take on the business side of it.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of panel talks, which is really interesting. So there's tons of people from different professions. And I don't know if you can drop the comment or like the website. I can drop it into the private chat comments if you want to share it for people to kind of see who else was on the bill as far as conversations go. But there was, really the most interesting part to me was the heavy focus on AI and how that came into play in terms of creating tools for personal development, which is really interesting, not something that I had ever gotten into. And I know the use of AI and all of this is a very controversial conversation. And a lot of that came up while we were there. Just to give you a small example of something that happened is one of the gentlemen, and I'm not going to name names and things like that, but had taken a picture of the audience, and through this app that he had developed, could then have all the information of everybody that was in that photograph, every evidence of anything online that had ever been put about them, right there in the palm of his hands, just from this one photograph, right? And I'm sure this technology has already been used by other powers that be, you know, to have that be very quick self-identification. But it brought up the privacy issues too, right? Where this certain gentleman had, you know, a privacy encounter with a person through this process where then he had to sign an NDA about, oh, you know, like you found some information on me that this, like, I don't want that to be found, right? So it was really interesting just to have that immediate, how this changes things so quickly for us, right? How this really changes how we live in the world. And really there's other things in my life where I'm having a very huge perspective shift right now. And maybe that's something that a lot of people are. So some personal things have happened in my life to do that. But anyways, that aside, the use of AI and also to describe ideas. Right. So a lot of ideas that don't necessarily have the fruition yet. So showing maybe an idealistic way of this is how we want life to be. What does this look like? How can we use AI to demonstrate or show this visually to people to communicate these ideas? Right. So and I've seen this a lot over the past few years, especially with things like DALL-E that can create AI imagery, so that we can kind of speak, this is what I want it to look like. And it can be a very creative tool in that communicating this thing that hasn't yet come to be, right? So I saw a lot of that going on. There was a lot of healing practices, which I really, really loved, right? There's lots of somatic work. So there's lots of movement. There was breath work. There was looking into, you know, there was shaman there that were bringing in ancestral wisdom, which was really nice. There was nutrition focus, right? So it wasn't, it seemed like there was a lot of different layers of what were the offerings there. And then of course, you know, there's Matt Powers who would bring his cutting edge soil information, which was phenomenal. And then there was information about, you know, extraterrestrials and, you know, other life forms. And it goes on and on. There was a whole healing room so you could have your eyes read, you know, and told about that your health. You could have your feet, you know, do some reflexology. There was integrative practices where it was acro yoga and Thai massage and dance all fused together and partner working together. So in terms of thinking about regenerative, it was, I felt like a lot of the things that we were looking at were immaterial, which was fascinating to me because it was really a lot about ideas and things that didn't have material tangible form. Yeah. Graham, take it from there. He's always got another add-on. So I love to hear like his because we see different things, right? So.
Well, you did a very comprehensive wrap up. You know, I spent quite a bit of my time as our booth operator for our exhibits of designs and meeting with people in between, you know, the various events that were being held. And through that, you know, I got to meet some amazing people, you know, who just stopped by to chat. I actually had a follow-up chat today with one of the folks who was working there. That was Wisdom Happy. And we had a good chat. He's down in Guatemala today, and we were able to touch base and spend some time reflecting on the experience of Regen World, which was good, but then talk about all the different things that we want to follow up with from that. So probably half a dozen to a dozen folks that, you know, I met for the first time. One project that was of particular interest is one of the ladies that Lindsay sat in on her talk. She happened to hit the booth up just a little bit after that, and she's got family property in Algeria in Northern Africa and wants to turn it into a health and wellness retreat. And you know, a couple hundred acres of land about 20 minutes from the beach on the Mediterranean. So that's a really exciting project to follow up with. And, you know, we've got half a dozen folks from around the local Austin area who came in to meet with us as well, folks that were there as potential investors in the different businesses that were being pitched, folks that were there just looking for help on their properties. So we've got a lot of work, I think, to follow up with in terms of new opportunities to work on, and not least of which was Rebecca Birdwell. You know, she's got family land as well that she wants to look at as an option for regenerative pasture management and beef production. So just so many great opportunities from a permaculture perspective, you know, new people that we've met. Certainly I got to say that, you know, for myself, spending probably 45, 60 minutes in deep conversation with Matt Powers, different ways that we've been raising our kids and talking about homeschooling, lots of different alternative healthcare practices that we delved into. It was just great to have, you know, the opportunity. It was a pretty small venue, to be honest, and that was good because it made it very intimate. You could spend time with people, spend a lot of time in discussion and get deep into the weeds rather than just casual conversations. So very, very enjoyable for me, and I'll be certainly looking forward to the next one to go back to.
Lots of talks about quantum too, which I love.
Quantum, what's that?
Quantum, like quantum physics.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So is Jonathan and Gosday down there?
Yeah, Jonathan was there.
Oh, man, I haven't seen him. What about Gosday, his wife?
I didn't see her personally, maybe.
Wow.
Gosty was there. Yep. Jonathan was there, came up and gave me a big hug. Gosty was there for most of the event. Probably half the team, three quarters of the team from Eden Energy was there as well. So
okay.
They're actually on the booth right next to us for most
of the time. Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, I haven't seen them guys in so long, man. They joined FFA like 3 weeks or maybe 2 weeks after it started. You know, so got to know them quite a bit, and Jonathan's he's a character, man. He's got a brain on him, put it that way, you know.
But I've been trying to get him on the podcast. He's very busy,
and he you know what? And it doesn't matter what the subject is. If you want someone that's good at talking about stuff, he is good. He's whatever it is, man. He's a talker, man. I like him. Hard worker too.
So I'm not sure about that AI though. The picture in the room. What do you think of that, Travis?
What's that?
Lindsay was talking about the guy was took a picture of everyone.
I'm not cool with that, man. I mean, a drone could take a picture of a crowd and then have all their, you know, zoom in, facial rec, whatever it is, and have all that information on you and like that. No, I'm not cool with that stuff. No, that means there's zero privacy, you know? And I've also heard things about Wi-Fi that with AI can actually send out radio frequencies and in the dark pick out humans.
Yeah, say not as well.
Oh, in the dark. So it doesn't matter. It could be used as a camera without being a camera. I could still, the whole shape of a person. I saw this demo. I'm like, no way. I go, we're screwed. I got to get my 200 acres and be on one end of it. And have the entrance be 200 acres away from my front door.
Right? Couple shout outs. We got Apotheke Natural Foods who joined us and City Nature YYC from here in Calgary. Thanks for joining us.
And our good friend Henry has joined us as well.
Henry! Right on.
And that's, is that on Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great stuff. Well, thanks to everybody in the audience who's listening. It's nice to have you here. And if you have any questions, just pop them in the chat. We've one or two people here might know might know a wee bit about permaculture if you have any questions. So what's in the plan? Are you still under snow, Travis? Or are you ready to get out yet?
It's a couple of weeks ago it got up to 75. And then a couple of days later we got 10 inches of snow. And then that melted. And then it got up in the 60s again. And then over the weekend it got cold. And on Tuesday it dropped 5 inches of snow. And now that's gone again. So there's down to the grass again. So I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it could snow tomorrow. It could be warm. Just don't know. It's the bipolar part of the year. And Minnesota's like that. You just never know.
Yeah, I worked out there for 6 months between August and May.
But we did get changed to Zone 5A from 4B. So got to expand the grow a little bit, you know, more plants and stuff to choose from now, more trees. So that's cool. I haven't checked to see how much more variety I have to choose from now, but it's got to be quite a bit to go from 4B to 5A. I don't know how far that is.
Yeah, it's 5 degrees F on the average.
Oh, it's only 5?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought it was
more. The ABs are just a 5 degree split now, so. So, yeah, we got moved from 5B to 6A here in my location. I don't think it's a whole 5 degrees, but it was maybe a couple.
Okay, so it's not that big of a variety then.
Yeah.
But I hope my figs made it through the winter because it hasn't been that bad in the winter the past couple of years. So I just left my figs outside this winter, and we'll see what happens with them.
So, see, even though you've gone up a time zone, or a time zone, a grow zone. Does that mean that like you'll never have like a period where it'll drop back down again? No, because you still have to. Would you not still have to design for that lower grow zone?
I would.
I normally like a buffer of like 2 or 3 grow zones just in case.
Yeah, because Minnesota, it's not gonna. No, it's not gonna be like this all the time.
Yeah, I mean, our cold weather in the Northern Plains and Midwest is largely dictated by which way the weather is coming from. So if we've got warm air coming up from the Gulf, you know, Texas area, or if we've got that cold, chilly stuff that Lindsay sends us from Canada, then, you know, that can make a difference of a 30, 40-degree shift depending on which way the wind is blowing, especially in the wintertime. So for us, you know, I take that approach, Cormac, that you suggested. You know, I kind of design for zone 3 through zone 7, even though I'm in zone 6. And, you know, if you look at the true definition that the USDA uses for the climate zones, you know, it's the average of winter minimum temperatures. And so averages being what they are, you know, you can still get much lower temperatures than what's listed. So technically I'm from -5 to +10 or something like that. It's the range of averages. But I can get -20 Fahrenheit in February. And so, you know, And I got to be prepared for that with my plant selections.
Yeah, and here, I guess, I've been in Mexico for the past 2 weeks, so it's been much warmer where I've been. But here in Calgary, it was 17 degrees last week, and I came home to 2 inches of fresh snow last night. And now it's back up today. So, like, we have these huge 40-degree variances that we have to manage here. And I think we're specifically unique on the belt where we are with the Rocky Mountains. We have Chinook winds, which come over. If you've never heard of those, it's a warm wind that will dramatically shift. We can go from minus 20 to plus 20 in a day, right? So I think that actually changes the nutrient density and the intensity of the medicine that grows here, because it has to be able to manage these massive fluctuations. So I think it actually strengthens the plants in our area to be doing that. And I want people to come over here and do some investigation if they haven't already to find out, you know, what does that dramatic shift do to plants? You would think it would create higher resiliency, which would then manifest in the nutrient density of the food.
Yeah, so Henry has actually asked a question. He mentioned here our grow zone changed recently. Might they keep changing, and how can we plan for that? And I think those are good questions. So if you look back through the history of the USDA climate zones, and I'll use Michigan because I'm most familiar with it. When it was first started back in the late 60s, our climate zone was zone 4. And that became zone 5A, zone 5, and then 5A, 5B, and now 6A. So first what happened is that they actually redefined the zone. So that shift from 4 to 5 wasn't actually a change in temperature. It was just a reclassification of the zones, and that was in the 70s that they did that. The most recent change that most people are seeing was one that was done in 2023, where pretty much all of North America ended up with about a 5-degree shift, you know, which meant half a climate zone of change. And so I went from 5B to 6A. So that's been pretty much universal. But, you know, if you were sitting at 9 degrees and then changed to 11 degrees, well, that would be enough to move you into the next climate zone with only a 2-degree shift in temperature, you know, from the average perspective. So might they keep changing? They will. But, you know, if I just dropped from, went from the top of one zone into the bottom of the next, I'd like to believe it's going to be a long time before I see another 5 or 6-degree change in temperature in Michigan. Personally, I'd be cheering that on because I might be able to grow some bananas here in the future. Who knows? In any event, the planning for it, I think, just goes back to what we discussed earlier. It's just making sure you pick plants that are robust across a wide range of temperatures. So if you've got stuff that's frost sensitive, you know, I'm putting it in a greenhouse, you know, so that I can make sure it gets preserved in the coldest of temperatures. You know, so I've got one of my greenhouses is 95% complete, about to start work on the next one. So I can put some bananas and citrus and olives into that. And, you know, those will be rated down to about 15 degrees Fahrenheit. And, you know, I'm hoping to get 25, 30 all through winter in those greenhouses. Everything else that I'm going to put outdoors is going to be good for minus 20, because I've seen those temperatures here, you know, in the 10 years that we've lived here.
And just to confirm, I agree, when you say plants as well, plant varieties, the different, I know, like mice or raspberries in Florida, different types of raspberries further north you go.
Bingo. Yeah, and that's a good point, Cormac, especially, you know, when I mentioned, you know, citrus and bananas and olives, I've got specific varieties which I know are rated to those temperatures. So when it comes to olives, it's Arbequina. Is the one that's, you know, most tolerant of colds and frosts. That's the one that's grown in the, you know, central parts of Texas for commercial crops. But like I said, it can handle to 15 degrees Fahrenheit here. For bananas, it's the ice cream banana or Blue Java, which is rated to 15 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when it comes to citrus, I'm talking things like Meyer lemons and a couple of tangerines and Satsuma oranges that can handle those temperatures.
Yeah, and then there's the very, like, the beginner sort of bring in the rocks if we want to bring in heat, you know, to create microclimates, and, you know, working with albedo and the lightness of your wall and your surface areas to either attract light or to attract heat with the dark colors, those sorts of things. We can also plant to capture snow in our climate, or we can plant to create shelter in gardens that we can leave over winter to then create a microclimate situation over winter. If you wanted to protect, say you have fruit bushes and things like that, you can utilize native grasses and leave them long standing to give protection instead of, you don't want to have to wrap your plants. I know, in my opinion, if you have to wrap a baby plant and baby that much, it probably isn't going to be that resilient after all. But if we can utilize nature and plants to create that sort of womb-like structure around our gardens, then that's another way to protect them.
So another great comment here from Henry. He said to you, Lindsay, that he just bought some plant-based makeup and cleaners from Norway, and they talk about the potency of their medicinal herbs in that climate because it is a tough climate.
Yeah, right? That's awesome. Thanks for that, Henry.
Yeah, and then when you were talking about the plant resiliency, Graham, that's another thing that came to mind to me. It was my experience when I went and talked to Brian over at Zero Fox Tree Crops, and sometimes he was sourcing seeds from people that had really resilient bushes or fruit trees in times of natural devastation. So when we think about these things that are happening up here in Canada, it's we're getting blooms come up and then frost kill, and then, okay, we have no more peaches this year. So this is the second year in a row. It keeps happening for us. But if there's that one peach tree that's out there surviving this over year after year, those are the ones that we want to be harvesting from and planting and seeding from. So keeping your eye on those species, even in the wild, for your native species, you know, what is really thriving through this sort of environmental change, we'll say.
Yeah, that's a great comment too, Lindsay, because now that I have been here 10 years and I've seen those vagaries in the climate, you know, it's 2 years in a row now that I've lost, you know, peaches, pears, apples, plums because of the late freezes killing the buds and blooms. And so I'm starting to see some of the varieties that were the commercially recommended ones that are probably really not suitable for this climate. You know, they're just a generic, you know, sort of Midwest peach tree. And I'm finding that, you know, my native peach trees that I grew from seedlings are performing much better than the ones that are commercially produced. So I think that's an important lesson for us all. You know, when it comes even to the annuals that I use, I'm trying to buy a lot of Landrace stuff, you know, that's been tried and proven throughout the Midwest by people who grow and regrow and regrow for multiple generations of their own seeds. So that's what I'm starting to do now as well on those annuals is, you know, replant my tomatoes for, you know, four or five different generations at my place so they can become more adapted to my location.
Which brings up another topic that we were talking about with the microbiome, right? And the seeds and our influence of our own microbiome within our seed and harvesting from our own land our seed, and how, you know, growing instead of buying, purchasing seeds from many states or many provinces over, when we start to nourish our gardens and circulate those seeds with our own microbiomes, can they then now provide more nutrients for us, you know, that are easily assimilated into our constitution because it is within the food itself.
All good stuff from what? Those questions from Henry. Awesome.
Good question, Henry. And I'd like to welcome Eco Restore Consulting, who's joined us as well here on Instagram. Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions, throw them in the chat.
And if that's too much for you as well, that's where a designer comes on. And you can, I'll put the link in the description for Permaculture Canada. Are you still doing the strategy sessions?
Absolutely, we are. Yeah, I've held probably half a dozen of them over the last month with folks that have found us through Permaculture Canada or my local website, or folks that have come through some nursery presentations that we've made. The last 2 months have actually been pretty fantastic for us from a growth perspective with design work. We've had record sales, and we're all very happy about that, especially me as the local installer, because I've got now three new customers here in Adrian, Michigan, where we can do the installation work. So we're on a bit of a lick right now, which is great to see, and a lot more opportunity for us coming up.
That's good.
That's great news. So I'll drop my link in the comments as well. So that's what we're saying there, Thomas.
No, I said that's really good that he's growing over there in Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we want. Yeah, go ahead. And just for clarification as well, Lindsay and I are in Celsius and Travis and Graham are in Fahrenheit. When we're talking about temperatures.
I can bat both ways because I lived in Australia, so.
Yeah, he's on both sides.
I'm all right at minus 40. Then that's me. Everything else, I'm gone.
Yeah, you wait till you hit a minus 40.
That's Minnesota right there.
Yep. And I went outside and I made a video in my gym shorts and flip-flops to see how long I could last out there in minus 40. And I got about 4 minutes. It was pretty good. But it's a great plug for Food Forest Design Minnesota during the winter, you know, freezing my ass off just to make a point, you know, come and get your design, your yard over the winter. Yeah, but it was definitely a cold day. That was a cold day. So I don't,
So how do you plan to hit the growing season now, Travis? Are you far off getting outside?
Probably. Well, it depends. It could be a month. It could be a month and a half. Just depends. Usually right around May. But you're not really safe until the end of May. Because you never know. You could get snow in May. It has happened before. It hasn't happened for a few years, but it has happened before. So
how are you resisting the urge to plant seedlings, or have you started?
Oh, I started already.
Resist what urge?
I think I have.
Why resist?
24 different varieties I started. And on a 10x10 patio, I'm going to have them.
I'm with you, Travis. We actually started planting our seed trays in the greenhouse just over the last week. Bunch of radishes in the ground, peas in the ground, you know, some of the frost tolerant annuals we've done. Starting to look at transplants for different trees and bushes as well. We've actually started our outdoor work with our customers, not to do any planting, but just like you, Travis, you know, we're not really officially safe until the end of May. And usually Memorial Day weekend is when people, you know, really start to get after it with the frost sensitive plants. But we started doing mulching and spring cleanup, and you know, that's what most of our customers are actually looking for right now, is just doing all the maintenance work that wasn't done in the fall, clean up all the leaves and grass and all the rest of it, and get everything ready for planting time. So we actually started our installation work last week, Julia and myself, and did 2 days worth of work at our favorite customer locations up in Pinckney. And nice. We started doing a lot of the seed planting in trays, because we've actually had a lot of our customers request that we provide them with the plants from stuff that we grow at my place, rather than buying it from the local big box stores and nurseries, because they know that, you know, we produce a good product. So a lot more customers looking for stuff like that this year, which is really positive.
Yeah, that's cool, and bolsters your income stream as well.
Yeah,
it certainly does. Yeah, I've said this before. I don't try to make a lot of money out of, you know, annual vegetable starts, because, you know, frankly, we make more money for the time that we spend putting them in the ground than we do actually from the plants themselves. But it's a great little thing to add on to a customer, to give them, you know, a complete service, you know, to be able to produce their annuals and put them in the ground for them, put them in the right places, which is another part of it. And so, you know, I've got probably 5 or 6 of my customers that will be looking for that from us for this year. I've actually taken a few folks the next step, where instead of trying to plant so many annuals in their gardens, that they let me just plant all those things at my place and I sell them the produce. So things like potatoes and corn, where, you know, you really need a lot of space in order to grow those in sufficient quantities for a family. You know, I've got the acreage, but most of the folks that I'm working with have got like a 1/6 or 1/8 of an acre for their garden space. And so we don't want to take it up with those, you know, large crops, so we can focus on putting all the rest of the stuff into their garden that's, you know, perennials and beneficial for them. Herbs, medicinals, that kind of stuff.
Great stuff, Blunzy. How far off are you?
I'm super far off. I have some scions coming. I ordered a whole bunch of cherries this year. So those are going to be coming. They'll deliver them mid-May. We got lots of snow here, so I'm nowhere near that. Starts last year, we had a ton of starts. And it's really just getting later and later every year. I'm getting less and less wanting to do that sort of thing because, well, A, I don't have the time and space for it here in the city. I've been doing my starts out at my parents' place, and it's been under the care of my mother, which is amazing because she takes incredible care of it, and they go absolutely wild. But we find that they just go so big, and then they're spindly really fast. So there's certain things that we can do, and basically we've staggered them in the past where we start some starts in March, we start some in April, we start some in May. And it's just a big kibosh of, well, we never know because we just have so much weather variance here, especially just in this Rocky Mountain belt. It's going to snow on May long weekend, probably, right? Or we're going to get some freak hail storms. So really with the annuals and things like that, I'm more into growing the perennial vegetables as I can start to do that more and start to support those native species instead of thinking about, oh, I want this, you know, spinach or whatever. Maybe I'll just do lamb's quarters that'll just grow wild and I'll just grab that instead because of the effort and everything that's involved and the lifestyle that I'm currently living. I'm not staying in one place very often right now. So it's really perennial based medicine that I'm focusing on and these, you know, the food forest trees, the scions, that, and I'm boosting them up with things that I grew last year, which I did grow from seeds. So I had a lot of native plant seed that I did for all my guild plants, you know, my nettles and my legumes and all of that sort of thing. And that'll all just keep coming back. Now this year, I probably won't have to think about it too much. I'll just add a little bit more biochar and a little bit of humix around the bottoms and a little bit of microbiology. I have a couple different products. I've got some that I won at the trade show in December. So hopefully if they're allowed to ship that to Canada, I'll be trying that out. But, you know, I'm just looking at my design because I don't have my own map. It's such a chicken scratch version on my iPad of what I have actually grown because when I'm in the field, I'm just, you know, I grab my iPad at the end and just kind of draw on there what it is, and I just really I want to have a nice looking design of my own design on my home plate. Let alone, you know, at the same time, it's a nursery for me, right? I'm planting everything there with the hopes of getting my own land in the next year to be able to then bring all my babies somewhere. So yeah, so as far as like starts and seeds and things like that, maybe now that I'm back in the country, I'll start to think about it once the snow melts, and then I won't be able to stay out of the greenhouse. I definitely won't be buying starts from anybody else. I'd be growing them myself. I like to encourage people to think about the soil and the pods and where they're sourcing their plants from and what's been done to those plants ahead of time. So if you are going to do small starts yourself, you know, it doesn't take much. To just be informed of what's in that soil and what you're doing to the plant that you're going to be eating as well, right? Because we don't know what we're getting when we're buying from where we're buying from. So just encouraging, plugging people to look into that, you know, what is in that soil that seed is grown in? Where is that coming from? How far away from your home is that coming from? You know, and what the resiliency of that plant will be. Yeah.
So I feel bad telling you as well. It was 18 degrees Celsius here today.
Nice.
So it was very nice. We're having a very nice spell of weather. So for me now, I'm taking the week off the day job and I have to clear out the back. So towards the end of the week, I'll be starting some seed starts. Now, some people start their seed starts here in January indoors. And if you have a greenhouse, you get away with that. So it is. I'm well behind the curve. Again, but it is what it is. I've now 3 kids and 2 dogs to look after. So I'm kept busy. So this week I tidy up a pile of plants to plant in the forest garden out the front, see where I am then and see what seed starts. But I'm like you, Lindsay, I'm moving definitely towards more perennials just because it's easier. And it's, I sometimes get stressed out when you have all these like, I know, hundreds of seats starts, and then you miss a weekend, and then you say sometimes they get spindly, sometimes you miss transplanting them, and then you've wasted your time, you've wasted seeds, and then it's just like, no, just relax and just do what I can.
Yeah, just wait till the ground's hot. Here, that's the kind of where I'm at now. I'm just like, just wait until the ground is warm enough, and then just plant them in the ground. And then whatever comes up, I'll be happy with.
Yeah, it's a lot, definitely a lot less work.
Yeah.
Travis, do you want to tell us about the new platform? Are we about to know the Food Forest Design, your CRM?
Yeah, it's basically the CRM that I designed is a community-based platform for Food Forest designers and installers. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a paid member to take advantage of the community and everything like that, but there's going to be some paid levels where we will do a lot of lead generation and sales for you as a designer or an installer. And so, you know, a lot of people that are in this business, they're on the road all the time. You know, you're not in one place all the time. It's hard to work and market at the same time because you can't be in two places at once. And so I'm taking care of that problem for everyone so they can be out, focus on what's important, putting food in the ground, trees, plants in the ground. And I want to have the network focus on growing everybody's business for them. And, you know, that's how we spread everywhere and solve all these problems we got.
And you're effectively acting like an agency where I want to do Food Forest Design install. I come to you and say, Travis, can you handle my marketing? And just get
Yeah, basically, yeah. And also, we're building a CRM system that, you know, a lot of people lose contacts. You know, someone calls, someone leaves an email or a text, and it gets lost, and you never follow up on it again. Well, with AI, you're never going to lose anything ever again, because no matter how that contact gets in touch with you or your website or your social media, it's boom in your CRM system, and AI is following up for you to get you to a consultation. So it's doing a lot of work in the background so you can go out and you know, work and do what you love to do and still have jobs coming in. And and then there's a place for everyone to collaborate, because, you know, what I plan with this network is to get some big, big jobs come in, you know, just from, you know, like before, you know, getting real estate developers that are looking to, you know, design an agri-hood, you know, and just like, you know, Graham, you were working on some real estate developer for a while. You know, those projects are going to come out. They're going to come out of the woodwork the more exposure that happens. And yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. And then there'll be a network directory for everybody. So there'll be a nationwide network of installers or designers. And then a lot of education opportunities to have, you know, people like Lindsay and Graham as guests on a webinar to answer questions. And, you know, because I'm still a rookie designer compared to you two. So, you know, I defer, you know, to people that are better than me because I don't know everything. So, but anyway, yeah, that's where I'm at. It's getting there and I'm looking forward to it. And just thanks to be so successful.
Yeah,
did he get all that?
No, oh, I must have. I had to go. The wee boy just turned up there, but I'm sure that was more for the audience.
I know.
So people looking for designers and installers as well, they can avail the site and go and say, right, well, I'm in Michigan, who's there, and if Graham's registered, or Canada, what area they covers, what area cover.
Yeah, in that directory, yes. But if someone comes to the network looking for a design, we will handle the design and then, you know, find somebody to do the install for it. So, you know, designers have basically a free membership to the network because designers are the backbone of the entire network. So, you know, the more designers you have, the better, you know, and have designers everywhere. You can cover everywhere. And yeah, so that's basically what it's built for. Designers and installers to help, you know, with the parts of the business that are the parts that, you know, people just takes a lot of effort and a lot of knowledge to do things. And there's just some just don't have time, and it discourages a lot of people. So trying to solve a problem, you know, and I think I did a pretty good job of it. So.
Great stuff. So what's that website?
Foodforestdesignnetwork.com. That is the directory, business directory right there. And then there's also a member portal. And you guys can add your links to Permaculture Canada and the directory. And I know, Graham, you started to add to it. But, yeah, just whenever you get a chance, go ahead and add yours to it. Then you can add all your social media profiles. You can also get messages from site visitors that come across your business profile. They can send you an instant message. So just like emailing you. So there's other ways to be contacted. And so then they all get into your funnel. So a lot of good things.
So, Travis, what about the installer side of the business? Have you started to build a network for that as well?
That is who I am going to try to market towards, landscapers that are already have an established business. That way they can sell, not only sell to their customers, but it's not a big stretch to go from hardscapes to, you know, a food forest install if you train them right, you know, and they learn. And I think, and a lot of them have the equipment, you know, and some of them are looking to add another service to what they already offer. So I'm going to try, that's one of the markets I'm targeting is landscapers.
You know, hardscapes to foodscapes.
Hardscapes. My new word is foodify. So foodify your yard. Yes. Or the foodification of America. I'm trying to figure out how to work that into some taglines, but we're going to get them. Just something that, yeah, have fun with.
Class stuff. So, guys, what's in the pipeline for April? Anything exciting? Any more tours or site visits? Or
we're doing two California designs, and then we're doing we're looking into some land for a very large community project, which is super exciting. Now, bulk consulting hours as well with people. If they didn't want to go to the full design, then we're able to work with people. If they already have a good knowledge base, we can, you know, can talk them through as they install their things instead of providing a design right from the get-go. And some soil, lots of soil interests as well before getting their design implemented. People are wanting to take a good look at their soil and talk about that. So, yeah, Graham can speak more on that. This is all props to Graham and his hard work out there while I've been doing my Thai massage training in Mexico and visiting botanical gardens and learning about plants that I know nothing about.
Are you guys introducing humogenics to people? Is that what you were talking about before?
No, not necessarily that product. There's so many.
Okay.
People just need to be informed about, you know, what the choices are. And it also, you know, just like you talked about Cormac right in the beginning of your conversation with your person that you're working with. It's like, it comes down to budget, because we can do things for next to nothing, or we can do things for lots of money. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on your time and what you're looking for and what you want to spend, what you don't want to spend. And, you know, sometimes the earth will lends its own solutions for us. It's just being informed on how to utilize those solutions for a particular application. So, yeah.
Yeah, having had the experience with, you know, humates specifically and powdered humates, you know, in bulk quantities, they don't transport very far before it becomes very, very expensive. So, you know, when it comes to larger applications, you know, it's always better to try to source stuff locally. So that's why we're kind of a little bit agnostic to, you know, specific brands or you know, types of products, so we can help folks to get the stuff that's going to be the most economical for them. But back to that project that we're working on with the land selection, that one's very, very exciting for us. So we have a church group, a husband and wife pastor, who basically looking to build a community for their church members, and also then turn it into a place for internships that cover trade skills, cover agriculture, cover health and wellness, as well as all of the spiritual aspects of their community. So they're planning to have maybe as many as 60 or 70 residences on the place, you know, some for the permanent members and some for the interns. So they've actually asked us to consult to them on the very, very first part of this project, which is the site selection, so that we can find them a property which will check off a lot of boxes for permaculture, you know, minimize the things like risk of EMF from transmission lines, all the things that we want to avoid that could be negative for a property. So with that, we're going to be going meeting with their church members from the 16th through the 19th of April in Indiana. And it's going to be a very, very exciting time to kick off that project so they can do all the fundraising for the land purchase. We've already identified a number of properties that could be suitable, but now we're going to go through the process of evaluating all those and making sure that they're going to be good ones. But without giving the game away, we found one that looks very, very special, and the people are already very excited about it and has a lot of existing infrastructure and a lot of things that lend itself to being a very, very good permaculture property. So everything seems to be falling our way on that one nicely for having just started the project 2 weeks ago. So that, and you know, a bunch of on-site consulting work here in Michigan, starting the installation work with the designs that have been completed by Lindsay for two customers here in Adrian. And so we've got a lot of activity in front of us to start doing the infrastructure work and delivery of mulch and all that kind of stuff for those customers. I'll probably have six or eight quotes that I've got to do for install work for this year, you know, plus continuing on with all of our activities for the next round of sales for design work and consulting work for Permaculture Canada.
Okay, stop. I'm delighted. Let's go, Melfies. It's good to hear.
It's a long, cold winter, and we're happy that spring is here, because everything seems to be lining up that way. You know, as we've experienced in the past, right, where people would seem to refuse to do design work during the winter time, and then there'd be a rush in the spring. That seems to be the continuing theme for us.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Guys, we're nearly at an hour now. Any final thoughts? We'll just go around it. Lindsay?
I got a super quick one, and it's kind of off topic, so I'll just try to make it as short as I can. But it was just when I went out to Puerto Vallarta, I went to the botanical gardens out there, and they have a phenomenal project where they're working with a ton of different organizations, and they're trying to raise money to buy land all around them and build out their native plant species. So I'm just going to drop that in the private chat if you want to put that in the community group, just so people can look at the kind of work that they're doing. It really opened up my mind up into possibility. Even when I was talking with people that are making tequila and whatnot, how the monoculture crops, you know, of agave in that country and the actual interest of some of the people there that are like, but there's all these other agave and nobody's looking at them. Nobody's supporting these other species. And there's so much opportunity there in Mexico to really do so much for the people, right, locally, in on their patios, on their rooftops, and they really have the climate and they really do have the resources to do a lot with very little. So it's been a really nice paradigm shift for me to be like, oh, there's so much work to do out there with permaculture. It's really exciting. And I just want to encourage designers to also look at the ways that they can trade their skills for living quarters, because that was something that was really an opportunity that was presented on me, you know, for a number of occasions where it's like, oh, just come live here for free, right, and help us with this. It's like, wow, yeah, that sounds great. You know, and I don't know if I want to do Canadian winters anymore, so.
I get that. And, you know, that aspect has been up front and center for me as well, the other way, with me being a host site for folks to come and stay here. So you all know that Julie has been here now for about 6 months, but she's just one of what I hope will be many people coming to work and stay here. So I've got two people who are candidates for being number two and number three that, you know, we're probably going to go through the process of having them come here for a week, stay in the home, see if they like the place, see if they like the work, see if they like me and can put up with my vagaries. So all of that to say that my vision for building a community here is starting to take more shape, you know, with more people wanting to be involved. And, you know, if nothing else, they get to come here, spend some time, learn a little bit more about permaculture that I can offer to them, and then move on into the next opportunity. You know, it's just a great opportunity for me to help share my knowledge and help people along their way with their career development in permaculture.
Class stuff. Hi. That's cool. I'm glad to hear it's all going well. Travis, any final thoughts?
No, just get ready for spring. It's going to come quick, and grow food.
Keep it simple. So if anybody listening locally, I've another seed swap happening on Saturday. I forgot to say at the start of this, the seed swap went very well. I think about 4 or 5 people turned up, but this time of the repair and share, foil repair and share are doing a tool sharpening event alongside, so you can bring your garden shears and your garden equipment and get it sharpened. So another good community event. That I'm going on Saturday, so get myself out in the community more. It's very important. So I'm in for a busy month now. The weather's picked up and I'll be flat out. So lots of our exciting stuff happening in the background as well. I'm good confidence this will be the year I can give up the day job. if everything comes together. Guys, thanks very much. Lindsay Graham, Travis, thanks very much again.
Oh, yes.
And thanks very much, guys, for listening. And we'll see you all next week or next month again. What month is April? That's May. We'll see you in May. Cheers.
See you later, everybody.
Cheers.